Well, Rabbi Edelman, I have Googled you. And I have found, indeed, that Rabbi Edelman Blanc has done a great deal. As I said, he is the rabbi of Tiferet Israel Synagogue in Des Moines. He received his ordination from the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies at the American Jewish University in Los Angeles. Previously, he had graduated magna cum laude from Harvard University. He had been at the Burbank Temple Emmanuel and had directed youth programs at the congregation Bethel in Pittsburgh. So he's had a wide variety of experiences within since receiving his ordination. Prior to that, he was a research assistant in psychology, and he indicates that his passions lie in community development and making the Torah meaningful in our daily lives. One of the when it comes to the gay community, which is, after all, what brings us all together here today, Rabbi Edelman Blanc has been a spokesperson, I think, throughout his adult life for social equality on this subject. While in Boston, he lived in and was part of a congregation which had many gay members, especially gay lesbians, and noted during that period that many of the lesbians were coupled, and that indeed there were many happy and well-raised children in the community. And I think that was no doubt a good experience. There was also a gay connection to the rabbi's first introduction to Des Moines, which did not occur until April of 2009, which some of you may recall was immediately following the Varnum decision. And so when he came here to interview, that was a subject on everyone's mind, including the interview committees. And so one of the questions he got to answer was, what do you think about gay marriage? And I'm happy to tell you that he gave the right answer. You would never have made it here today if you had not given the right answer. You know, there is a very famous quote, too, that also has to do with his connection to the gay community, because, as I told you, he's been an advocate for gay social equality, and therefore has had the opportunity to testify before the legislature on one case in response to some particularly pernicious legislation that was aimed at doing what it could to thwart that concept. And really, there's a very famous quote that he made at that point. Well, at least it should be a famous quote, really. And that is, he said to the legislators present, I'm familiar with the words of the Bible which say, thou shalt not lie with a man as with a woman, but I am unfamiliar with anything in the Bible which says, thou shalt not sell them a hamburger. And there were a couple of other things in that same testimony which were of note. In any event, he has led a congregation which is, in the words of Plymouth Congregational, open and affirming. And I particularly enjoyed an item on the synagogue's website which responded to the question, who are we? Each item under that question was indeed of particular note, but the one that is probably of particular note to us is this. We are unique Jewish souls. We each follow our own path, seeking to become the Jews we want to be. We honor diversity in all its forms, welcoming interfaith families, same-sex couples, and people of all cultural backgrounds. I believe that represents what Tifereth Synagogue seeks to be and is what Rabbi Edelman Blanc is. Rabbi.
Good morning. I want to say thank you so much, Roger, for that wonderful introduction. I really appreciate it very much, and it is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here. Totally. Thank you very, very much. This is one of the best things I've gotten a chance to do in a long time, so thank you very much. I appreciate this organization because it's the Christmas season, and you decided to bring out the Jew. So that's a great thing. That's an unusual and great thing. And we can talk about that a little bit. What I'd like to do talk about a little bit today is sort of just a little background of where I come from or what I represent, and what's maybe important about that. And then I want to talk about just a sort of an update of where gay lesbian issues are in at least in the conservative movement, but basically in the Jewish community in general. I just sort of give a quick update, and I want to answer any questions that you have. I always say you can't offend me, so you can ask me anything you want. I'm going to give you a little bit of my usual spiel about what a Jew is and what a Jew isn't. So I know this is an enlightened crowd, so please feel free to doze through that part if you'd like. But being in Iowa, I always like to explain what Jews are and what Jews are not. I always like to explain that Jews are two things, not three things. Right? When I say that, what I mean is Jews in America are the religion that you've heard of that's been around for 3,000 years. But what we also are is an ethnic group. So number two definition is we're an ethnic group. If you ask me what type of American I am, I won't say, even though my family came from Poland and Russia and Lithuania, I won't tell you that I'm a Russian American or a Polish American. I'm an American Jew or a Jewish American. The reason being is my people were not exactly beloved in those places, and were not considered part of society, were not allowed to become citizens through much of their history. Why my family is in this country essentially is because what happened in that period of time, and Jewish men were conscripted into the Russian army, and you never got out. Right, so my family thought it might be a better deal to come to London and then America. So that's what I always like to explain. What I do like to explain is that Jews, what they are not a race. The reason why I like to explain that is two reasons. Usually, people who want to define us as a race are usually people who want to get rid of us. Right, so Nazi ideology, for example, we were defined as a race, actually below that, subhuman, and so forth. The other reason why I like to mention it is just because they're Jews of all different colors, shades, looks. So I always like to give the example, when I was in rabbinical school in seminary, one of my study partners is the rabbi of Uganda, who's a native Ugandan, and I promise you, we look different. He's much more handsome than I am, I will tell you that, and a lot brighter, but we look very different. I always like to point out that, for example, Paula Abdul is a Persian Jew, and we have a very different skin color, or I have to now update it and say Leah Michelle, who's on Glee, who is partially Persian Jewish. So now I've had to change that a little bit. So I'd like to explain that. The other thing I'd like to explain is some of the myths about Jews that I know this crowd probably is not walking around with, but I always like to explain them anyways. One of them is the biggest around this time of year is Hanukkah is not an important holiday. It isn't. Hanukkah is not traditionally an important holiday. It is made a big deal in the United States by Jewish parents because they don't want their kids to feel left out of Christmas. If you go to Jerusalem during this time of year, you don't see big Hanukkah sales. You don't see some guy dressed up as Hanukkah Harry on a corner with a bell. There's no Hanukkah episode of Friends or anything like that. It's not as much of a major holiday. I partly like to explain this is because this has been traumatic growing up in my youth. Because what would normally happen is we would come to this time of year and we would have the holiday concert. By the way, we Jews knew exactly what holiday it was. We didn't make the mistake, right? We understood. But you would have a Jewish holiday concert where they would bring out 9 beautiful Christmas tunes and melodies, which are gorgeous, some of which are written by Jews. And then that stupid dreidel song. Which is about a betting game, and it's all a very oily holiday with potato latkes. It's not one of our major holidays. Our major holidays are more around Rosh Hashanah, the New Year, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and Passover, the story of the liberation of the Israelites. So I always like to explain that stuff. I always like to explain not all Jews are rich or smart. I know plenty of dumb Jews. Some are in my congregation. But the fortunate thing is I can say that because they don't know that they're them. Right? So I always like to talk about that myth is one, but not all Jews are rich and not all Jews are smart. The other piece that I also like to mention too is, I mentioned to most audiences, Jews are not circumcised at their bar mitzvah. I'll explain why I mention this. We still practice circumcision, which is a question you can ask me about if you'd like. But the reason why I raise this question is twice while I was growing up as a young man, I was asked by teenage girls, was I circumcised on my bar mitzvah? And I have to be honest with you, at that age, there is no good answer. I mean, what do you say? There's absolutely no good answer. So I try and get rid of that in whatever audience I can. To more serious matters, let me talk about from where the background that I'm coming from and the perspective of where I'm from. So when we talk about American Judaism in particular, we talk about 3 major what we call movements. I hate the term movement because I either think of a symphony or I think another type of movement, so I tend to use the word denominations. But there are 3 major denominations in the United States. The first being Reform, the second being Conservative Judaism, and the third Orthodox Judaism. Now, the definition that you often hear about the differences between these movements is sort of this thumbnail sketch that Orthodox are the most religious, Reform Jews are the most not religious, and I don't think those are really good terms at all, because you can be a very religious Reform Jew. What I think is useful, the way to think about the differences is when you talk about Judaism, you end up at some point in the conversation needing to talk about Jewish law. You need to talk about the idea of law. So if you think back into world history, you had the figure of Paul, and Paul is the one who said that the laws of the Old Testament do not apply to Christians. It's in the same way. It's not to be fulfilled in the same way. Jews never did that, right? So we always are dealing with some way, even when we're not following the law, we're always talking about the law in some way. So the way I like to describe the different denominations basically is to explain that Orthodox is the slowest to change Jewish law. They'll often say that they don't, but in some ways they do. Conservative is is slow, but not as slow as the Orthodox. And then Reform Judaism tends to be quicker. So the best way to put it, let's start with one issue. Women as rabbis. Reform movement was the first movement, the first denomination to have women rabbis. Conservative Judaism actually, and I'm sorry to say this, didn't probably ordain their first woman rabbi until the early 1980s. As awful as that sounds. Now, myself, I grew up with women clergy as role models. By the time that I was growing up, that was pretty common, and that's not an odd thing to me. Orthodoxy still doesn't, for the most part, recognize women as rabbis. I'm from conservative Judaism, and conservative Judaism's got an awful name. And the reason why I say it's an awful name is because, at least in the United States, we confuse it for something else. We confuse it when we say conservative Judaism, we do not mean conservative politics. It's not like a conservative church. If you went ahead and you polled most of my congregation, if you could get them to show up to poll them, you would find that most of them are pro-choice. Did I do that right? I always mess that up. But most of them are pro-choice. You would find that probably most of the congregation votes Democrat, as Jews tend to, even as they go up in economic class. Jews tend to still remain Democrats. You'll find that they tend to be liberal. You'll find that often on social issues, even my Republicans are pretty liberal about social issues. So when we use the term conservative, we don't really mean that. Actually, in other parts of the world, we don't use the term conservative. We use a term called Masorti, which is traditional. The idea in conservative Judaism is that we try and conserve tradition. That's what's being conserved. So things like, we believe that there's some wisdom to what the rabbi said about keeping the Sabbath. Right? So there's something to preserve and conserve in that and things like that. So that sort of gives you an idea of sort of my background. And what interests me very, very strongly is the mix between how to be a religious person, but religious doesn't mean you can't be progressive, open-minded, or thoughtful. Right? One of the things that most concerns me in America today, and if you look at Robert Putnam, has written about this a little bit, partly what has happened now, the way religion, it used to be that years ago in the pews you had both Republicans and Democrats. You had liberals and you had conservatives. And partly what has happened, mainly because of where the religious right has gone on issues, including issues of sexuality, sexual orientation, and other things, has spent so much time focusing on it that they've turned off people from church and religion. Right? So people are now choosing partially their religious affiliation, if they're affiliated at all, based on politics. I don't want to be part of an organization that condemns people who are gay, which I don't want to be part of an organization that does either. But the part of the problem with this, is, I think, is what's happened in this country is the religious right has so much, the way they speak is so much defined to say that religion is this closed-minded attitude, this self-righteous attitude, this critical attitude is what it means to be religious. And I really don't believe that. I don't believe that. Where I've encountered some of that, I'll just share with this as a group. I always like to talk about this a little bit. I was proselytized not too long ago by a local preacher, local pastor, in my synagogue. In my sanctuary. And that reflects an idea of religion is one that I've written a little bit about that I don't accept. Right? I don't accept that religion is about being closed-minded or feeling that you're absolutely always right. To me, religion is about the quest to learn, the quest to engage with other human beings and with God, not the quest to tear down others, and not to go ahead and satisfy your own ego by going ahead and being critical of others. So that's part of where my background and where my interests lay. A brief sort of outline. How are we doing time-wise? We're doing okay? Okay, time-wise, and I want to answer any questions I can. Let's do a little bit of an update of where gay and lesbian issues are. I'm not the expert on this, but in sort of American Judaism. What I'd like to say is there's a lot of progress. There's a lot of progress. I will tell you that this is a painful issue for me to talk about, though. It's a painful issue for me to talk about because it's embarrassing. Right? My religion, as in most religions in America, has been homophobic, racist, patriarchal, at times oppressive, and that's hard. That's really, really hard and it's painful. Fortunately, what we have hope in is the religion gets its act together around these things. And I think in a lot of ways the Jewish community is getting its act together on some level around gay and lesbian issues. So to give you some idea, the Reform Movement was the first to ordain gay and lesbian rabbis. They were also the first to do gay weddings or same-sex weddings. And so they were the first to do that. Conservative Judaism, which I know more about 6 or 7 years ago, actually 2006, issued their statement that allowed for gay marriage and for Jewish clergy to be out. Now, I want to say out because there were already gay Jewish clergy. And there was already gay and lesbians in the seminaries. Actually, the seminary I was at, we all knew who they were. Right? It was not, the seminary I went to was the more, it was interesting because around this issue, the seminary I went to was the less radicalized because the faculty were some of the members of the movement who were trying to change things. So the student body didn't have to be particularly radicalized because our teachers were the ones that were writing the papers to try and change things. Which also meant that most of us, to be honest, on the ground, knew who was gay, who was living together, and things like that. And it wasn't such a big deal when we transitioned over till they finally said, okay, we can be open about this. Interesting enough, when I understand the other seminary had other issues where you had people that somehow felt like they'd been betrayed, that they didn't know their friends were gay and things like that. And we were like, we all knew what was going on. We were just waiting for the paper to pass. So it's just an interesting culture how that changes. I went to school on the West Coast, if that tells you anything, instead of the East Coast. But in 2006, the conservative movement does something very weird. So authority lays in your local rabbi. So I have the authority of what happens in my parish or my congregation. But there is a committee of rabbis that decides what are possible opinions. And in 2006, a paper was released by one of my teachers that talked about that it was okay to be gay and to be lesbian and be a rabbi, open the door for gay marriages. Sorry, I use that term. It's not the proper term. I apologize. I just don't see anything bad. But same-sex marriage, that opened the door for those type of things. But what's weird about the conservative movement is they passed at the same time another paper which said, no, it's not okay. This is part of the problem with conservative Judaism, is they said they can have two different opinions. That now, fortunately, the movement has followed the one that says it's okay. The seminaries are open to gays and lesbians, and there's not as much of an issue with that. I will tell you, in my own congregation, I don't do a lot of preaching on this topic. Because it's, in some ways, I feel like it's preaching to the choir. And that's a wonderful thing. That's a beneficial thing. Not that I don't still see some homophobia in my congregation, but it is warming to me that it seems like a lot of the Jewish community gets it and is sort of on the right bus. Not everybody, and they're still pushing to be done. What also is wonderful that happened in 2012 is the same authors of that paper that talked about the issues I just mentioned released a new newly designed wedding ceremony for same-sex marriages, and it's awesome. It's really beautiful. It's really well done while staying within the tradition. And what's also great about it is I said, okay, look, if we're going ahead and we're modifying ritual, let's get rid of the patriarchy and the same idea. And the same thing. So what's great is they created the Jewish wedding ceremony typically has some sense in it that somehow the man is possessing the woman. Right? It's not slavery, it's not whatever, but there's some sense. And then he said, look, if we're doing something regular, let's go ahead and yank that out too. And so that's part of some of the wonderful things that they've done about that. Orthodoxy still behind the curve on this. Still very much behind the curve. So that's sort of the current status of things. I have not been able yet to do a gay marriage. No one has asked me yet. So if you know two Jews who'd like to get married, please send them my way. But I'd like to answer any type of questions I can. Anything you want to ask. Like I said, you can't offend me. You can't bother me. Insulting my wife probably would not be good. Yes?
Yeah. What's the dichotomy between Judaism going through the mother and conversion?
Oh, okay, sure. So the issue that we're talking about, the terms that we often use are matrilineal descent and patrilineal descent. Okay, so two ways to be Jewish, right? Two ways according to the... Well, we'll get that in a second. According to the religion, there are two ways to be Jewish. One is to be born to a Jewish mother, has been the traditional definition. The other is to convert. Right? And we have conversion. One of my other experiences I just got to mention very briefly was to have a pastor in Des Moines say to me in my synagogue, "You mean that there are Christians that convert to Judaism?" I've worked with many conversions students. By the way, we don't proselytize, and that's an issue in itself. We're not really interested in that. But I've had students come to me, and most all of them have grown up in some form of Christian tradition. Right? I haven't worked with non-Christians in conversion. So that was a fascinating question to me. But traditionally, one is considered Jewish by either conversion or by being born to a Jewish mother. According to the Reform movement, it can also be through your Jewish father. So if someone has a Jewish father. So that's essentially where the two things. Now, according to the majority of the tradition, that people who are convert into Judaism are just as Jewish as anybody else. So much so that you're not supposed to even ask about their previous history or anything like that. You're considered as Jewish as anybody else. Now, do we have some people that don't seem to do that? I would say there has been, and there is, and it really bothers me. I think it's a form of racism. The other piece of it that bothers me about it, too, that I have to explain is I think it actually reflects something. It reflects that some of the people that I think that spend a lot of time talking about, well, converts aren't so Jewish, is because they're having a problem with their own Jewish identity. They're ambiguous about their Jewish identity. So they're grabbing onto the one thing they have, even though they may not be living such a Jewish life or following the ideals and things like that. I find it both a sad thing and an angering thing. Did I answer that question at all?
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
Since you kind of touched on it, what about the ultra-Orthodox in terms of how they affect the law in Israel and where they fit in this?
I think it's interesting because I think, so for one thing, Orthodoxy is not a centralized movement at all. So I want to explain that for us. So you have people who are under the banner of Orthodox who can be much more modern and much more liberal. So I don't want to talk about Orthodoxy in general. I worry about the ultra-Orthodox in Israel for a number of reasons. How much control they have over politics. They are taking steps that will nullify my conversions. They've tried to take steps that would nullify my conversions in Israel. Conversion matters in Israel because if you're already Jewish, you can automatically become a citizen of Israel just by saying, I'm a citizen of Israel. So conversion becomes an issue when we talk about Israel. And currently only the Orthodox can do conversions there, but they're trying to make sure that they don't have to recognize overseas conversions from the other movements. I worry about the ultra-Orthodox. I think what you see in this world is you see in a lot of religious groups, you see some amount of radicalization among the right in Muslim society, in Christian society, and I think you see it going on, and I think you see some of that in the ultra-Orthodox. Their approaches to women in Israel have been very alarming. About issues about what women wear and things like that have been very, very alarming. And I think it's problematic. And let's be honest, they don't think I'm Jewish. They don't think I'm a rabbi. That's another piece of it too. So it's a very difficult thing. Now, Orthodoxy is actually in some ways growing. They're doing very well as a movement. But they are also still a small percentage. The thing I have to remind people is Orthodox Jews are often the most visible. But they're not necessarily the most numerous. The biggest population of Jews in America are Reform Jews. Conservative is second, and Orthodoxy is smaller. But if you're in a movie and you want to show someone Jewish, you show someone who's a Hasidic, part of the Orthodox. You show Hasidic Jews with the things in the black. So if you watch the movie Ghostbusters, when they want to show you Jews praising, they take out the Hasidic people dressed up as Hasidic Jews and they do that. So, yep.
Actually, a question about, so specifically, how a conservative Jew approach, say, for instance, the laws in Leviticus dealing with same-sex relationships? And I bring it up because there's someone I knew, there's a guy I knew at one point who's a conservative Jew, and I was talking to him about this, and he said, oh, well, I can be with a guy intimately, but I can't have anal sex. He's like, that's the only thing my rabbi says I can't do, but I can do everything else.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting. I'm wondering how that sort of came about.
Sure, let me tell you how that plays out. Essentially, it becomes a legal matter. And then I want to add something on the side of that, okay, before that. Because it's a weird distinction. It's not one I'm totally comfortable with either. Essentially, the paper that I talked about said that relations between same-sex relations was great, was good, except for anal sex. Right? Let me say two things about that. Where that comes from is the difference between what they can, within conservative Judaism, it's a legal tradition. And I don't mean overly legalistic, because I don't believe that. But it's a legal tradition. So the idea was essentially that the laws that have been created by the rabbis, clearly rabbinic laws, around these things, that they could be overruled based on human dignity. was essentially based on the idea of human dignity that you find in our legal text. There is a great emphasis on the importance of human dignity, even to the point of overruling law. Right? Judaism is often depicted as only legalistic. When you look in the New Testament, it's sort of depicted in that way. It's not. It's not fully that. So the idea here is that dignity can overrule those rabbinic. The problem is according to the tradition, when you have something that's understood as something that's really biblical, you can't overrule it on human dignity. So this is what they said. They said, look, we want to go ahead and we want to support relationships between two men, between two women, and all that way we can say the rabbinic stuff, but we can't say this is God. But let's talk about the practical. Okay? Part of what their goal is, remember, part of what the goal that's going on here is to still maintain a legal tradition. Right? So that's part of the goal here. But part of it is what's happened is you've created a test that will never be asked. So let me tell you something about the conservative movement. Conservative movement has always been an ivory tower movement. It has. It started in a seminary in New York, in the JTS. It's always been an ivory tower. The one thing that conservative Judaism can control is who gets into their seminaries. Now, I believe that the people that wrote this paper knew, and absolutely knew, that in an interview for a rabbinical school, it would never be asked, okay, so where are you from? What do you believe about keeping kosher? Do you have anal sex? Right? So part of what I think partly what has happened is in an attempt to create, to help maintain this legal structure was the creation of an acid test that they knew would never be asked. Right? So there's an element of that. The other thing that I'd say about it too, look, there are all different types of prohibitions in Judaism. This is where I think homophobia comes in, and this is where it gets bothers to me. There are all, when I hear about Jews that are overly focused, not overly focused, but are so focused on homophobia and things like that, there are so many prohibitions in traditional Judaism. Why do you focus on that one? And that's where I often see where the homophobia is. So when I hear people talking that way, I mean, it's not in our Ten Commandments. It's not in anything worse than other stuff. It's hard enough being a Jewish person. Right? It's hard enough being a Jewish person. The other thing that I do want to also mention about this is I always like to point this out, but I think it's important to point out nowadays. As I mentioned earlier, Jews don't proselytize. I want to explain that for a minute. Jews don't proselytize based on belief. The reason why is it goes back to the story of how we read the Bible. We don't read in the Bible, we don't read in the story of Adam and Eve, the idea of original sin. We don't have the concept of original sin. Why that's important is we believe people are born into this world as blank states. They don't have to be baptized. They don't have to be saved in any way. When I convert somebody, I'm not saving them from anything. I'm actually making your life more difficult. Because what I think is very important is Jews don't believe that Jewish law applies to non-Jews. Now, I have no Judar. So I have no idea. I have no Judar at all, which means I have no idea who in this audience is Jewish or who is not, who's born Jewish or anything like that. I'll get it wrong every time. I will get it wrong every time. So I don't want to mean anything, but for those of you who are here that are not Jewish, I don't care what you eat. Right? I don't care what you eat. I don't care what you do on a Friday night for Sabbath or anything like that. So partly I always like to define that because I think a lot of the, back to an earlier point about how we view religion in America is that people are walking around thinking what other people should be doing. And yes, Jews do that to each other because we do that. But we don't sit there and go around and think, I don't look at my Christian neighbors, my thing, go, boy, they're eating pork. You know, I actually don't do it for my own congregation too much either. That's not what I'm about. How are we doing, John? Time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? Here's one right here.
Sure.
What's the history? I mean, not too in depth.
the short answer, yarmulke and when you wear it?
Oh, sure. The yarmulke or kippah that I'm wearing on my head, I will explain, is only a piece of clothing. It's not a religious item. It's relatively new. It's sort of from medieval days. It is representative that God is above you, is essentially the idea. There's an idea that it would be, you would lack humility to walk in this world without recognizing that God is above you. It's not a commanded thing or anything like that. Jews more likely wear them when they're either praying, eating, or studying. I used to be, often I'm doing one of those. Unfortunately, it's usually the eating during the day, so I wear one. It's also an identity thing. The thing that actually is supposed to be more required is if you ever see the fringes under people's clothing. I don't wear that, by the way, for a very funny reason, which is my wife asked me not to wear them because she feels like she's married to a priest. Now, if you want to think about that one for a minute. Thank you all very, very much. I really appreciate it.